Good evening, one and all. I know, July, and here we are with another book and a chat. Well, people in America, I hope you enjoyed your unofficial, illegal holiday on Monday. Yes, it's an illegal document, the Declaration of Independence, just in case you didn't know, because they weren't all there together when it was signed. It was signed over a couple of days, and by law they had to all sign it together. So you realize your independence is illegal, America, and I'm sticking to that story. Anyway, I am here, and I was just talking to my guest because it's gone very dark outside, and she's not that far from me. In fact, she knows sort of the area where I am. And it's pretty dark down in her neck of the woods as well. So I think we're in for another storm, but we can't complain. We had some pretty nice weather over the weekend. In fact, I was even sitting outside listening to the music, supping a beer and watching the world go by yesterday evening, which is the first time I've done that for a long while. But anyway, I am here and so is my guest. Now, one of the things I think that over the good last 10, 12, well, I don't know how long we've been going, 14, 15 years we've been doing these shows. One of the things I've noticed in that time is the increase in doctors and lawyers writing books. Now, doctors, obviously, with the use of laptops and computers, people don't have to try and read their writing anymore. And lawyers, well, when you think about it, they spend half their life telling stories, don't they? Well, that's what it seems. But a lot of them make really good authors, including my guest today. What can I say? She is an attorney, a reviewer, a host and producer of a podcast, as well as creating a writer's law school, which we'll find a bit about as well. I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on this show today, I have the one and only Jody Millman. Hi, Jody. How are you doing?
Hi, Barry. How are you?
I am not bad. I don't know where the weekend went. I think it was just such an enjoyable sort of weekend. I know that I do the flea market Saturday and Sunday, and I know in there it was absolutely roasting. So, yes, I know it must have been nice for people. It was a nice bit of breeze yesterday and stuff like that, but it was good. And I think a lot of people needed a bit of a break. It seemed to be that people were sort of saving up for it, and it's good for them. But I am, apart from that, I am here, and you know, people say, "How do you do?" I said, "Well, I woke up this morning." That's that's all I can ask for these days. But I am here, and I am good. As I said at the beginning, you started. You still are an attorney, and you're not far from me, down in Poughkeepsie, in New York. But like a lot of people we've had on the show this last month or so, it seems, you started off basically doing nonfiction, didn't you?
I did. I started out writing a guide to Broadway. And it was something that my father had created back around 1998. And then it took off. It was a bestseller with his publishing company.
Wow.
And unfortunately, my father unexpectedly passed away. So they asked me, first of all, would I represent the brand and go and do the talks for him, which I did. And then they said, hey, would you be interested in doing, you know, any further editions of this guidebook? So I did. I did two of the New York editions, one of Chicago. And that was an awful lot of fun. So I did start out in nonfiction.
Right. And this is, what's it called, Seats or something? Is this like a theater guidebook?
Yeah, it's Seats, called Seats in New York. And it's, for example, we have all the seating charts for all the theaters, Broadway,
right,
Off-Broadway, you know, a concert hall, stadiums. We have how to get free seats, how to get tickets. I mean, it's everything that the savvy ticket buyer needs to know. And it was really a lot of fun. I got to go to every single Broadway theater. I mean, how many people can make a claim to that? So
yeah,
it was really quite an experience, yeah.
So did you sort of say, don't sit here because there's a pillar right in front of you and stuff like that?
That's how the whole thing started, because
really?
My father took my mother. Yes, he took my mother to the theater, and he was pissed off because they bought these expensive tickets and they were right behind the pillar. And he said, we were sitting at Thanksgiving dinner one year, and he said, you know, somebody ought to write a book.
Right.
That's a guide that tells you where the best seats are. So that's how the book was born. Yes.
Yeah, because I mean, yes, it's not just that, is it? I mean, you, if you're sort of looking for tickets, or if you get given tickets or something like that, you sort of have to hunt around and try and find where the tickets are, and then it's only little squares on a map, you know, on a sort of empty sort of area, and you don't know, you know, it might be over the side, but there might be the corner of the orchestra pit jutting out, and you just don't know that sort of thing.
Well, you know, also we found that when we looked at the charts for the theaters, that the ones that they had produced and the ones that Telecharge had produced, they were inaccurate.
Really?
So that's why we had to go to the theaters and look at the theaters, make sure everything was accurate. And we found that some of the theaters went ahead and used our charts after we had created them because they found they were more accurate. So, I mean, that's quite an honor. But it was really, you know, I was more of an editor, if you know what I mean, because
right.
I did a lot of the writing, but I had people who were doing research and I had people who were taking photographs. I mean, there were like we had graphic artists. There were like five or six of us that took to put that volume together. So that's a totally different animal than writing fiction. But I did learn a lot. I learned a lot about the publishing industry. Yeah.
And as well as enjoying yourself, I'm sure. I bet you managed to see a few shows in doing it, didn't you?
I did. I really did. And, you know, I always had a love of theater, but now, you know, I walk into a theater and I go, okay, the best seats are right here, and this is what the line of sight's going to be, and this is where the sound is the best. And it's weird to walk into a theater on Broadway and know exactly how many seats there are in there.
what changed you from there to actually go into fiction, or was it something you'd always wanted to do?
It was something I always wanted to do. And, you know, I felt that, I mean, I made a commitment to seats. It was almost a 10-year commitment to do all the books that I did. And at that time, honestly, the internet blossomed with all of these sites where they had interactive seating charts. And they basically put the book out of business, to be honest with you.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that was an impediment. And then I always knew that I wanted to write fiction, and over the years I've been making notes and doing outlines. I said, you know what, this is my opportunity, and I sat down and I did it.
Of course, you know, you were able to use your legal knowledge and experience in writing these thriller novels.
Well, you know, I knew when I wanted to write that I wanted to write about what I knew.
Yeah.
And so being a woman attorney, I knew that I wanted to write about a woman attorney. So most of my practice had been in the area of family law, and I knew that I didn't really want to delve into that, but I had some criminal law experience, and I had these wonderful real life connections to these true crime murders that happened here in Poughkeepsie. So those became the inspiration and the fodder for my Queen City Crime series. So it was the stories kind of called out to me because of my personal connections to them.
Right. And your first one, The Midnight Call, not just any old book, just multiple award-winning books. And I love the one at the end, the first place blue ribbon as the best police procedural.
Right, that was quite an honor.
That to me, you know, I would think, oh my goodness, talk about your peers in a way.
Right.
So congratulating you. So that's great. I mean, did you sort of sit down thinking I'm going to write a series, or did it just sort of start and then you thought, no, I can build this into, you know, the characters that need developing, I can build this into a few more of these? How did it work?
Well, you know, it wasn't until literally the last moment when I was submitting the book to my publishing house for publication that I added the last line of The Midnight Call, which created a cliffhanger, and that then I knew it was going to be a series. So really, it was really a very last minute decision. And it was one that it was kind of fun, you know, to realize that, okay, I liked my characters enough that I wanted to continue on with them and see how they develop. Because any writer knows that you write the characters, but they take on a personality of themselves, right?
You have no say. You really don't.
Right, exactly.
You know,
I'm just a vessel by which they communicate to the world.
Exactly what I say. Yeah, we're just the conduits that takes them from their world to our world. And, you know, some they totally take you down totally different ways you want to go to. Minor characters want major roles. Some even demand their own
book. Right.
Yeah.
right. Exactly.
It's like I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago who'd written a thing about writer's block. And I said, I don't think there is such a thing as writer's block. I think what it is, for whatever reason, the characters don't want to talk to you that day. It could be you, it could be you ignored them. It could be, you know, they wanted you to do one thing and you did something else. And they've got the hump. They're not going to talk to you. that's all
well,
it
you
is.
Know, they say, yeah, and they say the way to get over writer's block is to do an interview of your characters.
Yeah.
So that improves your point.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been, in fact, I did a show, I think. But I know I've sort of had others done a show where you basically interview your character on the show, you know, or the host interviews the character and you are the character sort of thing. And I remember doing it and I learned stuff I'd never even written yet, you know, about this character.
Yes, you were channeling that.
Exactly. That's what it is. And the thing is, all authors, well, over 90% of authors easy would agree with this, right? But you try explaining that to somebody who's not a writer. What are you talking about? Your characters talk to you.
They think you're crazy.
They do. So you had this pretty good success with this first book. Lots of awards and finalists and stuff like that. Did that, I mean, that must have really pleased you to sort of to get to that level on your first book.
Well, you know, what happened, it took me a long time to get that book published. Because I started, it took me about, I'd say, 7 or 8 years to get it published. And I was really getting frustrated, but I knew that I wanted to continue and write another story.
Right.
So I started writing my second book, even though the first book hadn't been published. So I didn't let it get me down. And then once the first book was published, then I was picked up by a new publishing house. And now they're going to be re-releasing The Midnight Call. So for, I think it's not available anymore. So if people wait until September, they'll be able to read it almost as a prequel to the book that's out now called Hooker Avenue.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, what you're saying like that, because I always use, Steve Berry comes on the show every year, gives us an update what he's doing and everything like that. And I always use him as an example about this sort of thing. I mean, it was 10 years of rejections he had. And he had, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 books rejected and stuff like that. Then suddenly, you know, the genre became a wanted thing, I guess, with Clive Cussler and stuff like that. And he got, you know, they took 5 of his books. The other 5 or whatever he had, he plagiarized to sort of make up some more sort of thing. And look at him now, you know. So never give up. Never stop sort of thing. You never know.
Well, you know, and Steve was a teacher of mine because I took a course with him.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, he is the master in learning story structure. And I really attribute a lot of the way that I write and the way that I think about writing because of Steve and the way that, you know, he instructed our group.
And he's been a nice person as well.
And a great fan of mine. I'm a fan of his. And you know, I'm honored. He always does a blurb for my book, so I really honored.
Good. No, yeah. I mean, he's come on the show every year for the last 10 years, I should think. And he, you know, when the new one comes out, because he has one that comes out, he has one that's going through the sort of final editing stage or just about to start printing, and he's just finishing or just 3/4 of the way through writing the one after. So you've always got the sort of 3-book rotation going on. And he always comes on and gives us sort of little snippets or slight insights into, you know, what's happened to Cotton or what have you. And that it's really great. So you did that. But then, as you said, you started writing your next book, which is Hooker Avenue. Of course, this is in your Queen City Crimes in the Hudson Valley down there. So did you sort of bring the characters over from the first one? How did it get linked to it?
Well, I did. I brought the characters over. My main protagonist is Jessie Martin, and she's a gal who's a single mom. She's an attorney that's had a rough time in The Midnight Call, and she really, in the next book, she's searching for redemption in Hooker Avenue. she's searching for redemption, but I picked up a character who had a very small cameo in the first book.
Right.
And it's Detective Ebony Jones. She's mentioned maybe on like two or three pages.
Okay.
But we discover that she and Jesse were best friends growing up. And now all of a sudden we have two women, one who's a cop and one who's an attorney, who both have very different motives, very, very different goals, and may have and have a lot of tension between them. And they must overcome that in order to solve what they believe to be a series of serial crimes and disappearances here in the Hudson Valley.
Right. I mean, and what's, I mean, came what, April it came out? How's it been going?
It's really been great. I mean, I would say for the first month or so, it was like in the top three of new releases on Amazon. And I mean, it's knock on wood. I'm knocking on my desk. It's doing really well. And the reviews, I mean, 5-star reviews all over the place. I've been very happy with the way that readers are reacting and people are coming out to hear me speak. I mean, it's just been a wonderful experience. I'm having a great time.
That's the important thing. I mean, if you're having a great time, that means your audience are having a great time as well. So that's great.
Right.
And this the new book, Hooker Avenue, this is basically almost that tells you about the risks of being a good Samaritan.
Exactly. And that's what happens to Jesse. She sees someone. It's a rainy night. She's driving down the road. She sees something on the side of the road. She's not sure what it is. And she discovers that it's a woman who's been beaten up. And it turns out that this woman is a sex worker who's escaped from an attacker. And it turns out that her friend Ebony, or her detective friend Ebony,
right,
is investigating a series of cold cases involving missing sex workers. So Ebony gets the idea that this woman named Lissy Sexton might be the key to unlocking her cold cases. Meanwhile, Jesse is the attorney for this sex worker. And she and her boss decide to put her in hiding because there's still an attacker out there who may be after her.
Right. Right.
So it gets the relationship between the three women become very complicated. And it's really, you'll see a trajectory of the growth of these three women as they learn about each other, they help each other, and then they themselves also grow. So it really is a fun book, and hopefully people find it to be a page turner.
Right.
I mean, that's really what I, you know, what I want.
Exactly. And you know, it's good to see, and this has been a definite thing over the last 5-10 years, the amount of female protagonists and stuff like that we have. And obviously in yours you've got three of them.
Yes, three of them, yes.
the book, obviously, you know, number two, have you how many do you think you're going to go? Are you just sort of, the story's going to keep coming up?
Well, I say when Poughkeepsie runs out of crimes, that's what I'm
saying. Well, we've got plenty of time yet then.
I'm working on the next one, and the next one is called The Empty Kayak. And again, it's inspired by a true crime where I move from land onto a mysterious disappearance in the Hudson River. It starts out as a boating accident, and we have to figure out whether it's an accident, whether it's a suicide, or whether it's a murder. So it's really fun. I'm in the trenches with that. I'm learning about kayaking.
That's what I was going to ask. Yes, I was going to
ask
that.
So
I mean, yeah, some people do write their books in different places so they can go and visit. You're just, here you are. I'm learning kayaking.
Right.
Canoeing.
Yeah, exactly. I get to learn about different aspects of the law and different aspects of crimes with every book that I write, which is really fun.
it must have been about a month ago. I was crossing, I think I was crossing before a car or something like that, or something, I can't remember what it was. And the person sort of looked out the window, you know, about letting me go first sort of thing. And I said, yes, rule of the sea, wind, you know, power after wind sort of thing. And it's right. I was walking, he was in a car. You know? You pick up the stuff, but you're right. I started one of the things that I was interesting that, that you do as well is this educational program, the Writers Law School, because a lot of writers get into a lot of trouble, especially with the, you know, this number of closures that there's been in the publishing industry and stuff like that, and the ownership of books and everything. What led you to do that?
Well, you know, it's being an attorney, and over the years, I did specialize and I did have my hand in copyrights and trademarks and intellectual property. And so as I would go to conferences, people would come up to me and they'd say, "Hey, I hear you're a lawyer. Let me ask you a question."
Oh, yes.
So it's like, okay, I think that my writer friends could use a little help in the legal department. So I created this program called the Writers Law School. And in a fun and easy manner, I educate them on intellectual property, copyrights, trademarks, what is fair use, what about infringement and defamation. Mm. And we go through this in about a 45-minute program. And it really, it's a lot of fun for me, and it's a lot of fun for hopefully the people that, that see it. I don't think anybody does this.
No,
so I thought,
it's needed,
you know.
And it's needed. It really is.
Yeah. Because people get into trouble and then they come to me afterwards. And it's like, no, you know, I can help you, but this is really what you should know going forward.
Especially with the, you know, the increase in sort of self-publishing or almost self-publishing
yes.
type things. You know, people just don't know. And as you say, they can sort of, you know, you hear a couple of times of people, they lost all the right. Who was it? I can't remember. Somebody I had on the show and a film had been made from their book, and you know, it's quite a well-known film, and they'd lost a fortune. Mm-hmm. They were still fighting mm-hmm. against it, I think. It was a lady. I can't remember what it was now. But, you know, they were still fighting it, you know, and it was like in the millions that the film's made. You know,
oh, that's rough.
Yeah, and I think it was settled out of court. I think she'd written a book about the dealings on it. I can vaguely remember, but I can't remember the details. But it was settled out of court. But I mean, if she hadn't sort of fought for it, these other people would have just gone off with all the sort of millions that the film had made, sort of thing.
You know, there's some really simple tips. I mean, that writers just don't think about. You know, as far as copyright is concerned. You know, people don't know what the Authors Guild does. I mean, there's so many simple things that are free that are out there for them. And that's one thing that I'd like to bring their attention to.
And actually, that goes for a lot of things. People just don't realize there is a lot of free stuff out there.
Right.
And they can be hoodwinked into paying a lot of money for something that's free. Another story I'll tell another time, but not me, somebody I know. One of the other things, and going back to your theatre part of your history, literature, shall I say, is you do your own podcast, Backstage with the Bardavon.
Yes. And again, that was kind of, it was an idea that I had because we have the oldest continuous running theater in the United States here in Poughkeepsie, and it's called the Bardavon 1869 Opera House. And I mean, Mark Twain and the Barrymores and Frank Sinatra and Aretha Franklin. I mean, we've had so many people go through this theater, but nobody was creating a history, you know, either an oral history of these people. So I happen to know the gentleman who's the executive director, a great guy named Chris Silva, and a partner and I went and said, look, this is what we would like to do. So we're in our third season, and we interview artists who have either performed at the Bardavon or have contributed to the music scene in the Hudson Valley. Nice. And it's been a really wonderful experience because it's so different than writing a book. I get to meet so many different creative types, whether it's puppeteers or actors or conductors or musicians. I mean, I met a guy who was he's a photographer, but he's also like some kind of scientist. He's like a nuclear scientist.
Oh, crikey.
So I mean, I get to meet these really interesting people, and it's inspiring that you can see the type of creativity that's out there in the world. I mean, it's just really amazing. It's really a lot of fun.
I can remember, I died a few years back, a person called Roy Hudd, and he used to do that with the old-time musical people. Used to have a show.
Oh, cool.
Used to get them on. They used to visit, you know, one of, like, I don't know, like the Empire Theatre, or, you know, the Whitechapel, Bethnal Green, and all these sort of London, the old London things, and sort of interview the people there and speak to some of the people who appeared there, you know, in the heyday and stuff like that. And it was really interesting, as you say, to sort of hear this sort of thing, and in your case, meet them as well. It's terrific. Well, what has been terrific? Go ahead.
Yeah, the last one I did, and this is really fascinating. In 1978, there was a guy who walked between the World Trade Towers.
Yeah, on
his name was
rope,
Philippe
yes.
Petit. And it turns out he lives in our area. And he does programs, instructional programs for kids. So I was able to meet him. I mean, that was the opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah.
To meet this guy who walked literally on air.
Right, indeed. Well, it's been fascinating chatting to you, as I knew it would be, Jodie. I was looking forward to tonight. But what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books.
Okay, well, people can find anything they want to know about me at my website, which is www.jodiemelman.com. I'm on Facebook at Jodie Susan Millman Author. I'm in Goodreads and Instagram. And, you know, my book is available on Amazon, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, both in the soft cover book and on an ebook. And as I said, three releases of The Midnight Call is coming on September 27th.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been really great chatting to you. Good luck with the new book. And perhaps when your next one comes out, you'll come back and chat to us again.
I would love that, Barry. Thanks so much and enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Jodie Millman. J-O-D-E-E-Q, if you want. And M-I-L-L-M-A-N. And as she said, jodiemillman.com. You can find out. And there's lots about her, about the law school, about the book, newsletters, everything like that on there. Really great. Well, that's it. I'll be back with a fresh guest tomorrow. Until then, as always, I have one thing left to say. Don't forget.